So, we're continuing our series on losing my religion, and some of the reasons why people might be struggling with their faith, and reasons why God might seem far away for some people, some for whom maybe once God seemed very close and very real. And this week we're thinking about churches that disappoint. You know that J. John gave a great vision of the church there, but there are a lot of people who are not very impressed for various reasons. The church can knock the stuffing out of someone's faith. So we're going to think about that tonight. A couple of months ago, Matt quoted a survey of non-Christian 16 to 29-year-olds, and which revealed that a majority of them, when they were asked to describe the church, described it as hypocritical, judgmental, and homophobic. Well, judging others for being judgmental, I might be a wee bit hypocritical, but never mind. Let's take it in the chin. Each of one of these can provide someone with a reason for leaving a church and becoming disillusioned with Christianity in general, leaving the church and never coming back. So we may or may not have an image of the church that is closer to J. John's description, but many have a far less attractive image of it. Many, as has to be said, have left churches in the UK over recent decades, and not all of them are people who have never had faith in Jesus Christ in the first place. Some were real men and women of faith who sought to serve the Lord faithfully, who have withdrawn from the church because the church has hurt them. Hurt them more than any other human institution has hurt them. Hurt them at a deeper level because they expected so much more from the church. Others have left because the church has not met their spiritual needs. And many a younger generation haven't come near to church in the first place because they don't think it has anything to offer them. In a culture of tolerance, they don't want to associate with an institution that is seen as a bastion by some of bigotry and prejudice, a throwback to a bygone era. So let's look at the charge sheet. Hypocritical. The church is hypocritical. Last week, a retired Anglican bishop, Peter Ball, admitted he committed misconduct by misusing his position and authority to manipulate and prevail upon others for his own sexual gratification in relation to 16 young men in their late teens and early 20s. 2 years ago, the head of the Catholic Church in Scotland, Cardinal Keith O'Brien, who was very outspoken in his upholding of Catholic teaching on homosexuality, resigned amidst allegations of inappropriate behaviour toward younger priests. Alas, it's the kind of story that's been repeated far too often, and not just in the mainstream denominations, but also televangelists who have fallen from grace because of some sexual scandal, or sometimes are a financial scandal, sometimes another type of scandal. Earlier this year, Mars Hill, which was a mega church in the United States, disbanded, surrounding accusations against its founder and leader, Mark Driscoll. They weren't accusations of sexual or financial misconduct. And effectively, they were accusations about abuse of power. In 2014, last year, Mark Driscoll was urged to step down by 9 of the Mars Hill's pastors in a private letter. And the letter quoted a respected evangelical pastor, Paul Tripp, as saying of Mars Hill's church, "This is without a doubt the most abusive, coercive ministry culture I've ever been involved with." It's said that when church leaders fall, it's usually because of one of 3 reasons: sex, money, or abuse of power, or sometimes a toxic combination of all 3. And when they do fall, it can cause huge damage to Christians and to the reputation of the church. It can cause people to leave. I know someone whose daughter was caught up in the scandal of the 9 o'clock service in Sheffield. The 9 o'clock service, for those who don't know, was a service aimed at young people. It grew hugely in the 1990s and had a congregation of 1,300 at its peak. It was led by a charismatic young leader called Chris Brain. And in the mid-1990s, it emerged that Brain was manipulative and abusive and had had sexual relations with several young women from the congregation. And the repercussions for those directly involved were devastating. Did huge damage to them, emotionally as well as spiritually. But I also wonder how many of those 1,300 people who attended the church then are seen anywhere near a church today. Yes, the church is at times hypocritical, guilty of the very things it seems to stand against. Judgmental. Alas, that can also be the case. I've known times in my ministry when pastoral situations, which by their very nature are confidential, have blown up. And there has been tongue wagging amongst some in the congregation. And it has to be said, there have been those who have been quick to judge. And I've thought, you know, I wonder if you would still be so harsh in your judgment if you understood the background to this situation, if you really knew what was going on here. And there are many times when I've seen others get themselves into situations, and I've had to remind myself of 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 12. If you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. The words of the Lord himself. And I've had to remind myself of his words of, but taking the floorboard out of my eye before I try to take the speck out of someone else's eye. Yes, and I've known those who have seen it as their responsibility to point out to women in the congregation that their dress isn't quite appropriate. But it's sometimes not downright judgmentalism that hurts and drives people away. Sometimes it's just crass insensitivity. My father worked on the production line of the car plant in Linwood in Scotland. Used to be Press Steel, and then it was taken over by Hillman, and they produced the infamous Hillman Imp. That was in the 50s and then into the 60s. And by the 1960s, a motor car was becoming, or had become, the must-have consumer item. And the car workers' unions were, as a result, very powerful, and strikes and walkouts were very common. And on one occasion, the plant closed because of a strike for 8 weeks. And I remember my mother fretting over whether or not they would be able to pay all the bills and feed the family. At the same time, they were members of a Church of Scotland church. And at that time, I don't know if it's still the case, but they celebrated communion once a quarter. And members were invited along they were given a ticket inviting them to communion. Now, on this occasion, as the communion approached, my parents received a visit from one of the elders of the church to tell them that they would not be receiving their tickets for communion this time because they hadn't kept up with the free will offering envelopes. Hypocritical? Yes. Judgmental? Yes, sometimes. Homophobic? I was 16 back in 1967, the year when the law was changed so that homosexual acts between adult males over the age of 21 in private were decriminalised. Now, in about 1970, when I was at Lancaster University, a new society started up on the campus. It was called Gaylib. Guys wearing Gaylib badges seemed to be everywhere. Change was in the air. A new language was developing. No longer was it homosexual or a myriad of derogatory names, but gay, proud to be gay. Not only was a new language, but more importantly, there was a new narrative, a new way of telling the story, an Exodus narrative. The story of centuries of oppression by the heterosexual majority and their institutions, the law, the church, and the media. A narrative in which gay men and women demanded freedom from the oppression of prejudice and bigotry. You may remember how Martin Luther King used the Exodus narrative in his wonderful I Have a Dream speech, giving a vision of freedom from Africa, for African Americans, freedom from oppression. And Galeb emerged when the sexual values of our culture were changing in any case. The introduction of the birth control pill in 1960 was beginning to change attitudes to sex and sexuality generally. The 1960s, certainly the latter part of them, had been the decade of so-called free love. Homosexuality no longer described a proclivity, a tendency, but an identity. To speak against homosexuality was to condemn a class of people. It was an act of oppression. And so when the church stood against gay marriage, it came across to many in our society as bullying, as condemning a whole group of people who identify themselves as gay to second-class citizenship, one in which they couldn't enjoy one of the most basic of all human institutions, marriage. Many see the response, the church's response to men and women who are same-sex attracted, as little more than saying, and this is how they hear it, it's not how the church is saying it, but it's how they hear it, don't. Don't because there are at least four passages in the Bible that seem to suggest that God gets annoyed at homosexual practice. That's what they hear. And some sectors of the church made great claims about people's sexual orientation being open to change when the evidence seemed to suggest otherwise. And that against a very powerful narrative of an oppressed people seeking freedom. Now, if the church is to maintain its traditional stance on homosexuality, then it will have to offer another narrative, another story to men and women who are same-sex attracted, a story which gives them a place within the pilgrim people of God. Not one which keeps them on the margins or which drives them into secret lives or out of church altogether. A story that upholds the teaching of the Bible without the taint of homophobia. It has to find a way of helping those who are same-sex attracted to take their part in God's great story of salvation and new creation. A gospel story which somehow makes space for them as it does for everyone who comes to Christ in penitence and faith. We have to walk alongside them as they seek to work out what the words of Jesus in John 8:36 means for them. If the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. When it is unlikely to mean, he will set you free from same-sex attraction. What does discipleship mean for the person who is same-sex attracted? Homophobia. Well, I believe the church has to work at finding new ways of expressing its traditional teaching on the subject. Teaching which I still think is in line with biblical teaching. Despite many strong arguments to the contrary, despite people I love and respect dearly holding different views, it has to find new ways of telling the old story if it is to be heard and not dismissed as guilty of homophobia as charged. Now, I spent a bit of time on that particular one because I believe that for many young people, it's the biggest stumbling block to come into church in the first place. And for many Christian young people, and not only those who are same-sex attracted, that is the issue which embarrasses them most about the church. The one they find most difficult to defend to their friends. Oh, well, what else might the how else might the church disappoint people? Well, you know, there are other factors that might explain why people leave church or never go near it in the first place. J. John, later on in that sermon talk, likened the church to watching a rugby scrum. You know, some very important conversation is going on in there, very intense, but all you can see are backsides. It's irrelevant. The church can seem to be so inward-looking, so obsessed with internal squabbles and things that, in the whole scheme of things, don't really matter, when there are huge national and international issues that people are looking for some kind of lead on, and our politicians are waiting for some focus group to give them the lead on. Well, it's been, I'm very glad to see the Archbishop of Canterbury having some very sensible and compassionate things to say about the refugee crisis and about the assisted dying bill, which thankfully was defeated in the House of Commons last week. And these are big issues that the church should be saying something about. But it's possible for the local church to become inward-looking, so much so as to set anyone with any spiritual life and vitality about them off looking for another church, another fellowship to join. It's possible for the church's teaching program to be entirely churchy, to speak about the life of discipleship as if it only happens within the church building. That those with genuine and deep spiritual questions, those who are truly seeking God's reality in their lives, those who might be facing mighty challenges to their faith, just don't feel the church is meeting their needs. It's possible for the church to become so inward-looking it begins to feel like a social club with religion as one of its main activities. Well, there are lots of possible reasons why people may drift away from church, or indeed walk out one day, never to return. Leaders can fall, sometimes quite spectacularly. They can be bullying and controlling. Others in the church can be bullying and controlling too, and they can wreak havoc among the faithful. The church can close off people's options and not allow for their doubts and questions. Some churches seem obsessed with trying to draw the boundary to determine who is out and who is in, whose doctrine is sound and whose is suspect. No one is allowed to think for themselves. They have to toe the party line on every issue. Some churches have an unwritten code, one that may not be consciously acknowledged, that says, if you're a proper Christian, you can't be vulnerable. There are no broken hearts here. No tears can be shed in this place. And people leave feeling more miserable than they were when they came in. And some churches, it has to be said, are filled with downright nasty people. Not St. Barnabas, I've hastened to add. I love everyone at St. Barnabas. I do. But, you know, I have a vicar friend who said to someone who'd just been elected onto the PCC of a church, you know, I'm really glad that you've stood for PCC and you've been elected. And this woman said to her, well, I don't know why you're glad about it, because I'm only on the PCC to oppose you. Churches can hurt. Churches can belittle people. Churches can compromise and live by the same standards as the world around them, rather than marching to the beat of a different drum. Churches are human institutions, as well as the body of Christ here on earth. And sometimes it's sinful human nature, pride and malice that gets in the way. Sometimes it's insecurity and fear. But at its best, it's the love and grace and presence and glory of God that shines through his imperfect people. There are lots of reasons why people drift away from church. But perhaps one of the most damning is boredom. You know, it's you've got to admit, it is an amazing feat to make the wonderful, creative, abundantly merciful, loving, faithful, amazing God of the universe boring. And I know it's a real risky thing for a preacher to say towards the end of a long sermon. But we can never make God boring, but we can make the church boring. We may not always come away from a church service feeling we've met with God in a profound way, but at least we can come away knowing that he was there, whether we felt his presence greatly or not, and knowing even in some small measure that his love for us is unchanged from the last time he filled our hearts with wonder, love, and praise. Yes, there can be a lot wrong with the church, a great deal that's off-putting to people, but at its best, there is no other human institution like it, because God is here. God is here, and God's presence is known. Let me close by quoting from Bill Hybels' book, Courageous Leadership. I believe the local church is the hope of the world. I believe to the core of my being that local church leaders have the potential to be the most influential force on planet Earth. If they get it and get on with it, churches can become the redemptive centers that Jesus intended them to be. Dynamic teaching, creative worship, deep community, effective evangelism, and joyful service will combine to renew the hearts and minds of seekers and believers alike, strengthen families, transform communities, and change the world. Pray, pray, pray for this church. Pray for this church. And pray, please, for its frail and vulnerable leaders.